Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with ultra runner and campaigner Sophie Power.
It's a good one.
It is a good one. They're always good, Ben.
That's true. I mean, the reviews would say otherwise. No, I jest. It was a really good chat with Sophie. Always is. She's been on before, but we haven't spoken to her for a while and she's been very busy.
She's a worker, isn't she? She is constantly trying to make positive change in running.
Which is good. Yeah. It's a good thing.
Agreed, right? Yeah. And it's through her kind of She Races campaign or that she founded. And it's about kind of trying to get more gender equality in long distance races.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, and not just sort of, it's not just a campaign where noise is made and sort of things are happening and it's kind of that sort of level. It's absolutely like, there's a guide for race, for camp, for race organisers to follow, and like anything that is seen is followed. You know, it's like, it's a real how-to.
Yes, exactly, yeah. There's
a sort of mandate, we want this to happen and make changes, everyone. It's like, here's the instructions. Like, it's really...
Yeah, very reasonable. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, I think she's been at the forefront of lots of change. I think the London Marathon changed its pregnancy deferral policy partly based on She Races commentary, so... All good stuff. Ben, talk to me about your running. What have you been up to?
It's been pretty low key, I think.
Yeah.
Since
the ultra.
Since the ultra. much discussed non-ultra. I've just been out just doing some nice running.
Yeah.
Not really looking at a watch. Not really having a watch at some time. Just like going off for a nice run around a forest and just having that sort of, going back to that sort of basics of just enjoying it. But have signed up for something else at the end of January.
Nice.
So, going to do the Benfleet 15.
Oh, yeah.
Because you and me are working our way through the more sort of abnormal race distances. Yeah, we're 10 for you, 10 miles, which we'll talk about. That's a pretty standard. 15 is not a...
You don't get a lot of them, but obviously you do get another one that you thought that race was that one.
Well, no. So, listeners might have heard me talk about the dog pack in the last episode. And... someone in the dog pack said, let's do this race, and then went, oh, I thought it was the other one, but we'd all signed up by that point.
Right.
But I mean, 15 miles, mud's involved, same.
I think it just sounds like a great winter race. Yeah, kind of like, you know, hills, mud, embrace the landscape at that time of year.
Yeah, I think so. So that's the next one. But I feel, I'm sort of had that sort of like post-race incredibly tired, not sure about doing anything more than just plodding around things.
Yeah, that's right though, isn't it?
That's as it should be. I think if you fight against that, you kind of end up
totally
being a bit ruined. So, but it's not, the race is on end of January. So at some point,
a little bit.
I think once November rolls around, it'll be like, oh, I should probably think about doing something.
Yeah, right. It will kind of
concerted effort towards this.
Yeah.
Right, come on, let's talk about the cabbage.
The cabbage patch 10. Cabbage patch 10. Headlines are brilliant race.
Yes,
definitely coming back next year. It's absolutely excellent race, and it's a kind of it gets a lot of stuff right. Like it's got just a little details. Like you get a nice wooden medal. Also got like a can of London Pride within seconds of finishing, which is nice. I'm into that.
An AM beer,
yeah. Nice. And sort of medium sized race. So I don't know how many. It felt like might be 2,000 people taking part. But like, so you get a sense of like there's an occasion happening. Something's happening.
Yeah.
But it's not overwhelming.
Yep.
For me, it's relatively local. Like it's kind of in London still. Pretty flat. Weather was spectacular for running on, actually over the weekend in general, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good.
It was probably like 6 or 7 degrees at the start. But that's what you want, isn't it? Because when you start running, you're kind of like, Brilliant.
Especially a race of effort like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I end up doing 104.03, I think. I had various predictions of what I'd do, but I think I would have been very disappointed not running under 105 and very happy with 103.
Well, you weren't far off.
So it's kind of like, it's about right.
Yeah.
It's about right.
I was looking at the results. Yeah. And Matt was mainly checking on to see how you went. But it was very interesting to see that race. If you'd gone under an hour, you would have finished 73rd or something like that.
Yeah, so quite a good
the caliber of running then. And I think the winner did like 48 something.
I know. People who run 10 miles in under 50 minutes, I'm not sure we're the same species. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm just like...
100%.
I mean, obviously, look, these people are training way more than I've ever trained and maybe have, you know, just more dedication and sort of...
Ability
at running. I think that's safe to say, but I mean, I don't think I could run one sub 5 minute mile, and it's just 10, you know.
10 of them, smashing it out.
It's funny, obviously we're going to go and talk about female participation races, and I found myself, as I do, I think I'm the kind of runner that I'll run with relatively okay male club runners,
yeah.
If I'm relatively fit, and I'll end up running in that same pace with very good female club runners.
Yeah.
And that was the case at Cabbage Patch as well. And it's kind of more interesting because like often they'd be fighting for kind of the top 10 places or whatever.
Yeah.
And as always, pacing themselves much better than I tend to be.
They show the skill and ability that basically very good runners have.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I really benefit from them. I'm like, I'm pretty sure these women are going to be running relatively even pace and I'm going to try and stick around, basically. Yeah.
It's a really good tactic.
So, it's good. And then Twickenham's a nice place post-race, so we ended up going for an AM pint, which I'm a big fan of.
Wait, so you'd already had an AM can of London Pride, or did you save the Pride for later?
I actually had to save the Pride because I was like, oh, I can't
drink that first. That can't be the first thing that passes my lips after this race.
Exactly, yeah.
What an adult you are these days.
Yeah, I know. But no, it was really good. And maybe a bit like you, was I just enjoyed the race experience. I thought I need to, so I'm going to try and do a 10K, maybe off-road, like before the end of the year.
Nice.
Maybe December or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. You quite like a Surrey-based off-road adventure,
yeah,
don't
true,
you?
Yeah. Yeah, there was some good stuff around there, weren't there?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, it's great.
But look, let's get our guest of the week on.
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. Ben, hit us with your first question.
Are we going? You doing any intro?
I'll do an intro at the end.
All right, intro at the end. Sophie, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That is how professional we are. We just launched straight in. Can you, amongst other things that we're going to talk about, let's talk about She Races to start with. I think that's probably going to be like a good topic starter. Can you tell us what She Races is, why you set it up, all those sorts of things?
Sure. So She Races is essentially, at its heart, really a set of guidelines for race directors to make races of all lengths and all types, and not just running even, kind of, we'll put triathlon in there and the cycling stuff in there too, more inclusive of women. Kind of get more women on the start line, give us a better experience when we're racing, and really equally value kind of the female competition kind of equally to the men's. So I set it up about a year ago, so not very long, really in response to, since kind of, that photo was taken of me at UTMB kind of breastfeeding Cormac, and that went viral around the world. And the reason I was on that start line was because they wouldn't defer my entry for pregnancy, which made no sense. And I'd already lost an entry 4 years earlier and I was really frustrated. And lots of race directors actually approached me after that saying, we've never had a pregnancy deferral policy and we realized we needed one, but we just didn't think about it because we're men. Yeah. And they're generally like, well, what else can we do? And so I started working with kind of races and kind of got London Marathon to put a pregnancy deferral in for the Good for Age. And then since then, kind of Chicago. And then I took a step back and said, it's not just pregnancy deferrals. There are so many reasons why we don't have as many women as men on start lines. And even the races where we do the 5K, 10Ks, we're not given that same experience. We still get T-shirts that don't fit. We don't have good enough toilet facilities or changing facilities. The marketing is still often a load of kind of skinny men at the front and really not diverse. So I did a really big survey of over 2,000 women runners, athletes of all distances, of all speeds, and said, what are the barriers to racing? What would you like to see at events? And had a huge amount of response, kind of 200 pages of stories, and I learned so, so much, and worked with race directors to turn this into the guidelines for racers, which are really kind of simple, free, pretty much, for them to do. And those racers have seen their kind of female participation rise, and we've got a huge amount of racers kind of signed up to adhere to the guidelines and their She Races races. And we know that, you know, when we look at the longer events where kind of ultra marathons, we're kind of 23%, I think the latest stats, these races are budging kind of 50%.
When you did the survey, what were some of the big barriers that were mentioned?
I think signing up, so we kind of look at, when you're looking at a start line, cutoffs. Half the women look at the cutoffs and they've been put off a race by those cutoffs. Logistics. So kind of 40% of women just don't know how it's all going to work, getting to the start line, kind of their safety around the event. Right. When we talk about what we experience in events, I think we had 96% of women had experienced kind of something in the event that just didn't feel right to them as a woman, whether that there weren't period products, they had the t-shirts that didn't fit, they didn't have changing facilities, there wasn't equal coverage of the kind of female competition alongside the men's. Something was there that could have been easily changed that the race director probably hadn't thought of, but would have got more women on that start line and having a better race experience.
Yeah. And that must start at the, like, the website and clicks and, like, look at the imagery and everything like that, like all those sorts of things, right?
It starts there and it's funny, kind of, I have race directors that message me and go, we're doing everything we possibly can on the race day. You know, we have period products, we have kind of females at aid stations, we've got kind of toilet facilities, we've got the great t-shirts, prize money. And so I open up their website and look at your imagery and look at how you're describing your race. And you're describing it as the toughest, baddest, most brutal ultra that, you know, you're going to get your head's going to get chopped off if you don't make the cutoffs. And actually, it's a really inclusive race and it's a wonderful experience. But unless you tell people what's available and what kind of race it is on your website, they're not going to sign up in the first place. If you show kind of only the elite runners at the front and you don't show a great diversity of colour, of size, of sex, we're not going to feel we belong and we're not going to sign up. So you've got to do the right thing, but you've also got to tell us about it.
I was thinking as well about not just sort of entering the race, but the experience of it. I did a relay race recently where at the end they did all of the men's prizes before any of the women's ones. So they went through all the age categories of all the men and then they got to the women. And of course, by that point, everyone had gone home. The only people left to sort of, you know, clap the women were the ones who thought they probably had, you know, their team had won a prize. So it's not just about, you know, I think people would think, oh, maybe it's about prize money, right? And it's about that kind of thing. But it's also about how you present things, isn't it?
It's so much more than prize money. I think people think prize money is a base. But when we look at social media and we look at, they're saying the, even the language, like, you know, the winner of the race is... And the top females is one. There's two winners in every race. You've got your male winner and you've got your female winner. It's how much they do a race preview. So the race preview might can list all the men, but the women are kind of an afterthought. It's the coverage of the race. I think UTMB this year kind of tried to commit to equal coverage for men and women, and it was really improved. It's not quite there, but it's a lot better than last year. And then when you put the results up, what's really frustrating is, as a woman, I want to see the podium. The women's race. And if you can't filter them and you're looking down the men's going, okay, there's first women, second, third, they should be separated out. There are two races and there's an overall, but really there are two races and we need to see our kind of competition and be inspired, not just for the faster runners, kind of the women as a whole. We want to see where we came in our categories.
Can we talk about the UTMB and those kind of races, those longer races? Do you think that actually the barriers to women when it comes to ultramarathons are more than for shorter races?
I think UTMBs are very low and you've got this kind of prolonged kind of qualification process which is very expensive. And holds a lot of women back. Kind of, we're less likely to spend the money. I think for the ultra races you've got kind of two parts. I think you definitely have the society. I mean, we have 5 hours less free time than men every week. We have less time to train. But a lot of that is how the races are described to us and how kind of we look at training needed for a race in terms of a male lens. So for someone who kind of gets a car and goes to the office, you know, maybe they need to run this many miles a week. But if I think of someone like myself, I do 20 miles a week on my school walk up and down a hill. That's brilliant ultra training. And a lot of women are training in their daily life to do an ultra. And we often kind of say, with the language around the races, the biggest, baddest, toughest. We forget that most people walk ultras. I know James Paul's on the podcast and he described it brilliantly. He walks really fast.
Yeah, he's a great walker.
Such a good walker. But you can walk them. And marathon training, it's actually quite hard to do a marathon from scratch in six and a half hours. But if someone gives you a 13, 14 or no cutoff to do 30 miles, that's much easier. You just have to walk and keep walking, fix your feet, eat a lot and you finish.
Yeah.
So I think we've lost that in the whole describing ultra marathons as super difficult and bigger than a marathon. I think we've lost the fact that the training's very different and actually kind of easier potentially for a lot of women to do. And there's a lot of reframing, I think, that needs to happen to get more women on those start lines, because we're absolutely capable. And when we enter, we often do really, really well.
Isn't there like a statistic that a lot more women finish? I mean, obviously, like you look at something like the UTMB, I think it was, what, 11% women or something? Is that all? But the percentage of finishers is higher because women don't tend to put themselves on the start line unless they're sort of, you know, they really feel prepared, whereas men are more likely to kind of, oh, wing it.
Yes,
I have no idea what you're talking
about. Guilty.
I think
it's not so much a question as an accusation.
It's definitely true, though. No, it's. I mean, we don't feel qualified to sign up for things. So that's where I think three times as many women cite cutoffs compared to men. They'll just be like, oh, of course I can do it. But you do look at in the stats, and one survey came out with that at 195-mile races, women are faster than men. And it's not that women in a whole get faster than men. That's still kind of 10 to 12% difference is that women were far more qualified to actually enter the event in the first place, because we were looking and we're like, we can actually do this. We looked at the cutoffs, we've broken it all down. We just didn't have the confidence to do it. And I guess that's where the intro ultras kind of come in, where you can have a go and it's 30, 35, 40 miles, no cutoffs. And then you kind of work out what you can do. And then you get the confidence to sign up for the 50 and then the very, very slippery slope down to the hundreds and the really silly stuff.
Yeah.
You mentioned the coverage of the podiums and all this sort of stuff. And it kind of brings up the point that most major races, the headlines would always suggest that the women are doing incredibly well. And the longer the races, you're getting women winning the race outright, regardless of how it's presented. But they're the winners. So there's a sort of just devil's advocate, like it seems like women are doing all right in terms of the performance and the capability. So what beyond the headlines though, and sort of taking into account what we've already said, what are the continuing issues then in terms of the performance side of women ultra running sport, and how what we see at the end of a race is different from what's actually taking place?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I think you certainly see the lack of women on the start lines. Yeah. We don't see that depth in the women's field. We don't see the kind of the women kind of stepping up from the shorter distances. You know, we're a real minority, and especially as the race gets kind of more technical, finding that confidence to be there. We are so lucky that we have so many phenomenal elite female athletes. But, you know, Courtney's still kind of several hours behind Jim in UTMB. And there's a real lack of diversity in that elite athlete base kind of being brought up. So there's that to kind of fix in the sport, kind of bringing a better diversity of runners through, especially in the trail, in the kind of trail scene and the non-pro, because most of these runners, they're not paid very well and it's expensive. I mean, our sport's really expensive if you're flying around the world. But I think women kind of on the races, having the confidence to be there, and then having, I think, that great experience while you're racing, it's quite difficult to do some of these races if you're on your period, if you're kind of worried about changing, if you're worried about kind of toilet facilities, and then being appreciated an athlete. And on the elite side, if we don't have that equal marketing coverage, those elite athletes can't get those equal sponsorships that allow them to support. So you have far fewer female elite athletes than you would do the male side. And pro trail runners are working really hard on this, and they were helping support me on the work with UTMB to make sure we even out that elite race, and that will hopefully trickle down to women more feeling that, you know, those longer races are something that we can do, and we know that actually we're really good when we get there, and we get the amazing feel of doing something kind of outside the rest of our life.
I was just going to ask about the kind of what resistance you've come up against, you know, because there is always this sort of pushback of, oh, you know, we did it fairly. I don't know what you're talking about. There was a thing recently, wasn't there, I think it was a 5K race where there was like a confetti cannon for the men's.
Yeah,
winner,
I put on Instagram that where's her confetti? Yeah, that blew up a little bit.
And it got quite a lot of pushback, didn't it?
I think that did get pushback. And you know, I've had an apology from the race director after that for the pushback on, you know, there was no confetti. And we point out a lot of stuff, and almost always race directors go, I just didn't realise. And they engage really strongly. And a lot of race directors are, thank you for putting these guidelines together, because, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And I personally, as a woman, I don't speak for all women. And I've learned so much with the survey results, with consulting with kind of women's of all kind of different backgrounds, all different speeds, kind of some of the issues, kind of safety issues that I'd never considered, some of the diversity issues I'd never considered before, and putting those into the guidelines as much as we could. So race director has been really positive, because I think we have to realise that races are a business.
Yeah.
And they make money. And if you can tell a business, here's some things you can do for pretty much no cost, and they're going to get more people on your start line having great experiences and coming back. I mean, why wouldn't you listen? So there's been some pushback, I think, some of the fell racing community, but wanting very tight cutoffs and not being so welcoming. But that is changing there too. So it's been really, really positive. I think UTMB took 5 years to put a pregnancy policy in.
Yeah.
But now they've been really welcoming and working kind of closely and thinking what else they can do. And then they've adopted more of the She Races guidelines recently, and it's for their 30 plus races globally. So we're now starting to get it outside the UK into other communities. Those races do the right thing. They're making more inclusive, showing their local races. So it's been really positive. It's a lot of work, but it's the stories that come back and the experiences women are having and getting to the start lines and finishing these, not just the tough events, kind of the 5Ks as well, which are tough when you're coming into the sport. That's your first step, and you want to feel that, you know, the cutoff is right for you, and you want to feel comfortable on the start line, and that's having a big impact there. So it's been really positive.
I think when you talk about like the UTMB and how that from the top down, that sort of where we've changed this policy and that means it filters down into these smaller events. How's that happening with brands then, do you think? Are the brands getting involved? Obviously, if they've got elite female athletes, they want to sort of like showcase them. But are they doing enough as well to then support everyone else?
I think we've seen more of the showcase in the elite females. I think brands are still kind of coming onto the train of showcasing kind of stories of a real diversity of female athletes from the back of the pack to the front of the pack and from all backgrounds. I think they are realising that runners don't all look like elites and we're not like elites. And actually for a lot of us, they're not very relatable. Mm. If I think of myself, you know, I'm not a pro runner. I train pretty hard and I represent GB, but I don't get to do afternoon naps, which I'd really, and I don't have kind
not
of
in a tent, sleeping in a tent.
It'd be amazing, but I don't get to do that. And so I'm looking to the real stories of women that kind of are juggling work and childcare, and we want to see these featured. I think for brands and the events, we'd love more brands to be the ones leading the way, saying, "I'm sponsoring this event. Now you need to make sure it's fully inclusive of women." There's a lot of brands that say we really support women, and then we see them supporting events that are really not inclusive of women. And they don't have pregnancy deferrals and they still have the T-shirts that don't fit. And they don't have the toilet facilities and they're not looking at diversity. And that should reflect the brand. So I think that's the next step change is really going to go into the brands and say, you're putting a lot of money into these events. And when I think back to how some big events have actually, we've convinced them to change their policies. When they said no in the first case, we've actually gone to the brand. And the brand has been the one that has put the pressure on. So yeah. We'll get them changed one way or another.
Yeah. Other than like improving your fitness, what do you think an ultra can offer people? I'm thinking about women here, maybe mums who don't think they've got time to do something like that. How do you sell in doing these ultra trail events? What do you think it can offer people?
I think there's something incredible about no matter what length an event is, and no matter how long it takes or kind of how difficult it sounds, crossing a finish line that you didn't think you could cross. I mean, for me personally, has given me so much strength in the rest of my life. When you set a challenge and say, that's a little bit uncomfortable, and then you finish it, and then it opens up your mind up to what else you can do in the whole of your life. I think ultras are amazing. I think there's a great time to be out in nature. For me as a mum, kind of, I know I run around an athletics track kind of for 24 hours, and at home, I look after 5 people and I just have to look after myself and focus on myself. And I have that clear mind for such a long period of time. It's time with friends. It's proper time with friends. Oh, and the food, aid station food, the cake. Oh, there's one ultra conscious decathlete. I used to do it all on the fruitcake.
Yeah,
that right. They had.
You've done that.
I've done it as well. Yeah. It was great, actually. It's January time, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's all about the fruitcake. So the whole thing, just as a fun thing to do, because runners do silly things. But I think that's ultra running. I think it's, and the pressure's off. So no one knows. I think the average pace in ultras, someone was like over 13 minutes a mile. There's no pressure. There's no, what's your marathon time? Because you can run an ultra 1 year and the same race the year after when you're much more fit and be slower because the course was really muddy or it was bad conditions. And I think it takes it out of the pressure of, well, what's your marathon time? And people ask me, I don't know what my marathon time is. Does it, why are you asking me? Mm-hmm. Why is that the most interesting thing about my running compared to the kind of places I've been to, the courses I've kind of finished or DNF spectacularly?
Yeah. Quick question for you, Kate, and for Sophie, but do you think that it's also, women need to give themselves permission to dedicate time to a passion like running? It's like, there's a sense, I think, probably passions like cycling, golf, ultra running, they are mainly male because partly blokes subconsciously or consciously kind of think they have more free time or and the weight of that can fall onto, like in terms of childcare, can fall onto women more. For you, Kate, was it, you're a very serious runner. Did you have to give yourself permission to kind of say, actually, this is really important to me, I'm going to dedicate a serious amount of time to it?
Well, I think it was probably more incremental than that with me. I mean, I started running to get away from ultra. Should have got into ultras that have had more time on. I do. You know, I notice a lot of people talk about, oh, I can do that. I feel too guilty. You know, there's a sort of constant kind of impression that we must be constantly with our kids, and maternal guilt is definitely a real thing. Clearly I'm a bit evil because I never felt terribly guilty. And I was lucky to have a very supportive husband, and, you know, who was like, yeah, you should go for a run. But yeah, it is a huge thing that you hear all the time. Just like, oh no, I can do that. Oh no, I can't join groups for my long run because I'd be more, you know, away from home longer. Again, it just doesn't seem to be something that the men who are dads say nearly as often. But there are notable exceptions and lots of very even and fair partnerships and so on. But it is definitely still a thing.
I mean, it's definitely what kind of comes out. I mean, I guess I'm a bit different. My kids kick me out the door because they know that I'm a nicer person when I get back from my run. Also that dad gives them much better snacks than I do. But it is a real thing, and it's a real issue, especially once you have children, is, you know, kind of social media tells you should be spending every second with your kids. And I know I'm a much better mum for having my own goals outside just being a mum. And I guess that was one of the reasons that picture went so viral, is it really kind of resonated with women that, you know, they had this kind of sense of self before they had children, and they'd lost that. And a lot of it is giving yourself permission. But I think there's a lot on the partner to give you that permission. And because it's really hard to ask for time once you've had the kids. And kind of, I have lovely messages from men who said, you know, my wife used to run before she had kids and had this time, and she just stopped. I just assumed she didn't want to do it. And then I realized that she was really struggling to say that was okay. And so I'm making that time for her. And I think setting these challenges is really helpful, because it's easy for you to just say, I'm not going to take my time for myself. I'm not going to do my run or my yoga or kind of going out with my friends because, you know, something's come up with a kid and I've got to sort this for school. If you've got that event there in the calendar, I hear time and time again from women, that's what they make sure they make that time, because they've got to do their training. And it's got to be flexible, and you drop runs. I drop stuff all over the place. My training calendar looks really good on Monday. And then by the time I got to Sunday, and my coach said, you did that bit on that day, that bit, and you didn't do that, but you did that instead. I was like, it's just life. Yeah. But you do make that time. And I think it's really important to feel that you're making that time, and really kind of speaking to the partners to try and make that time for the mum, because often she's not going to ask for it herself.
I think also there's also a case where it's not selfish in the sense that it's, you know, you're being a role model, and, you know, you want to, as someone with a teenage daughter, you know, you hear so much about teenagers struggling with dropping out of sport, teenage girls, you know, body image issues and so on. And, you know, I like to justify my runs by saying I'm providing a good example here. Probably self-justification there, but, you know, but it is kind of important, isn't it?
Okay, I'm a trustee of Women in Sport, who've done this brilliant work into primary girls and teenage girls. And, you know, at the age of 5, girls have less self-confidence in their sporting ability than boys. And that just gets augmented as they go through kind of the teenage years, and teenage girls drop out of sport at such a high rate. And I always do think to my kids, first of all, my boys think that girls are better running than boys, which is absolutely great. True. Also better footballers, because they love watching the Women's World Cup.
Yeah, there we go.
But, you know, my daughter's going to see me and go, you know, it's important to think about your body as what it can do, not what it looks like. And I know we're going to be fighting against social media, but if I can set a good example to her and show, and it's other mums and other women, that, you know, it's the juggle is worth it. It's an important thing to do.
Definitely. If people want to find out more about She Races and how to support it, how can they do that?
So the guidelines are all on the website, sheraces.com, and we're Instagram at she.races. So pretty much sharing kind of what we're doing, but really it's a case of, if everyone's at a race, if you're at a race, read the guidelines, and you see something that could be better, talk to the race director, send them feedback. They don't know what they don't know. And really, kind of, we have absolutely fantastic responses from them. They really do want to make their races better, but they can only do it if they're given kind of that female lens. And if they're a bloke, they don't have it.
Yeah. So thanks so much for coming on the podcast, talking about She Races. Really important and interesting stuff. Thank you for your time. Best of luck in the 100. What is the race coming up?
It's the World Championship 24 Hours in Taipei.
Oh, it sounds fun.
But I think I've got to say thank you to Run as well, because you guys have been behind the She Races campaign from the very, very start, and sharing it and helping out on it. So really appreciate kind of getting the message out there, And there's been a lot of change in races in the last year, and I think it's going to continue.
Great.
Hope so.
Our pleasure.
Good luck with the World Champs.
Thank you.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Sophie Power, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runners World for just £5. Head to runnersworld.com/UK/podcast offer to get this exclusive listener offer. Thank you for subscribing to the podcast. Wait a sec, you haven't? Well, you can and you should. So please subscribe to the podcast and share it with your mates, because it sometimes is useful. And you'll hear from us next week.
Bye. That's fun, mate, isn't it? I mean, there's...
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.